Welcome back to Misunderstood. I'm your host, Rachel Yucatel. My next guest, you have to be living under a rock if you haven't heard her name. Shayna Mokler is a model, actress, reality TV star, and most recently she was competing on Celebrity Big Brother. No stranger to being in the headlines, Shayna has been linked to some very famous men. Oscar De La Hoya, Travis Barker, Billy Idol, Dennis Quaid, just to name a few. But her fame goes much deeper than who she's with. She was the winner of the Miss America pageant in 1995, runner-up to the Miss USA, and has been Playboy Playmate of the Month. To talk about all this and where she came from and where she's going, say hi to Shayna Mokler.
Hi, Rachel. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you for coming. I'm so happy to see you. You look so beautiful.
Thank you. You do too.
Thank you. So I want to hear like how you got started. Where are you from and what did you want to be when you grew up?
Sure. I'm originally from Rhode Island, the smallest state in the union, born and raised. I had a love for entertainment since I was a very little girl. I would watch Barbie commercials and I would see, you know, most girls wanted the Barbies. I wanted to be the little girl on the Barbie commercial. You know, I had a big love for musicals like Singing in the Rain. And that's, I just always had a passion for that and wanted to get in the entertainment industry. I was a really late bloomer and my parents were like, I don't think, you know, this is, I wanted to be a model. And back then that was the era of the supermodel, the, you know, 5'10", Cindy Crawfords, Naomi Campbells. And I was 4'11 and 75 pounds and not growing. So my parents were like, I don't think this is going to work out for you. But I started doing kid modeling in Providence and I got national campaigns as a junior model. And then I eventually did grow and I started doing pageantry. I was Miss Rhode Island Teen USA, Miss Teen All-American. I did Miss New York USA. That's when I finally became Miss USA. And that's what got me to Los Angeles.
Got it. So tell me what that was like being in the pageants. How do you get involved in that? How do you find the best swimsuit? How do you find what you want to talk about? Tell me all about it.
Well, you know, because I was so hungry to be in the entertainment industry and there just wasn't one in Providence, Rhode Island, I did everything I could. So I did mannequin modeling in malls. I handed out perfume samples and we had a John Casablancas modeling school. I don't know if you remember those.
I remember that.
And I went to one and the producers and the recruiters for the pageant would go to the modeling school and they saw me and they were like, you should really do our pageant. And I was like, oh, okay. You know, the first year I did really good. I was first runner up, but I had no clue what I was doing. But my mom and dad knew how much I loved it. And, you know, pageantry is really cool because it's not just about winning the crown. Sometimes you really learn about yourself and you meet friends and there's lots of fun activities. And I just enjoyed it. So, I went back the next year and I ended up winning, but I got coaches. I worked with coaches. I worked with etiquette coaches. I did media training, makeup classes, walking, like you name it. And that's what I actually do today. I give back to the girls that I work with today. I kind of help them on their journeys.
Wow. And so what was like, tell me like one of your experiences, what was the best time you had doing it?
Gosh, I guess winning Miss New York USA was really, really exciting. There were over 200 girls. I was only 19, 18 and a half years old. And I was going up women who were, you know, up against women who were 28 years old, you know, who graduated college. Some of them, you know, were attorneys. And so that crown for me was very, very exciting. I learned a lot about myself and I obviously got to go to Miss USA and compete on CBS with Dick Clark and all these incredible people with 50 other women across the country. And it was a really incredible time. I got to work with hundreds of different charities too, which was like epic for me.
Oh, that's amazing. So then you said that's what took you out to LA. What did you want to do next?
I started off modeling right out of high school. I moved to Miami, New York, Boston, Providence. I modeled all over the East Coast and I was actually really successful, but I always wanted to be an actress. I always wanted to be on television or in movies. So getting to move to LA and be Miss USA, I got to travel the country, work with charities, but I got to sign with William Morris and that was massive. I got on my first television show, Pacific Blue, as a series regular, which was really cool. But I always wanted to be an actress. And, you know, we're always stereotyped as women, right? Like, it's like, oh, you want to be a model? Oh, you can't do that. Oh, well, models can't act, you know, pageant girls can't, you know, models can't act. And so it was really kind of cool getting to break those stereotypes and just keep doing and pursuing what I loved.
Right. And so how long did you act when you went to LA? What else did you do?
Gosh, I came right out of the gates running. I was on Pacific Blue, CSI, NCIS, Entourage. I think I'm really well known for being in The Wedding Singer. I was the stewardess who said, you know, there's this creeping coach who thinks he's Don Johnson. He said I was grade A top choice meat. So that's like a very famous line that everyone loves from The Wedding Singer. I was in movies like Love Stinks, all kinds of great, great projects. I did hosting, and then eventually I got on my reality show on MTV with my ex-husband. So
right. So before we get into that, now, how did you meet Billy Idol? Didn't you meet him on that movie that you just mentioned?
I met Billy Idol on the set of The Wedding Singer. He was in the scene that I was in. And it's so crazy because I had such a crush on him in the 80s when I was like 9. I was like 9 years old and I had this big Billy Idol pin that I would like wear in my jean jacket. And I thought he was so cool. So when I met him when I was like 19, you know, he was a lot older then, but I was still like, oh my God, it's Billy Idol. I was so like starstruck. It was so stupid. But he was really nice. We ended up dating for like 3 or 4 months. It's kind of funny.
Amazing. So do you have any good memories of him or things you want to share about him that we wouldn't know?
I mean, it was, you know, it was just really funny. I just remember being on set of The Wedding Singer and I was so nervous because of him. I had one line. I had that one line, the line of, you know, this creeping coach thinks he's Don Johnson. And it was the last shot of the night. It was like 11 o'clock at night. Everyone had been working all day. Everyone wanted to go home. And, you know, Billy was just sitting there just waiting for me to spit this line out. And I couldn't get the line out. Like, I couldn't say it right. Like, I was like, this guy thinks I'm top choice, grade meat. It took me like 15, 20 takes to do it. And I had one line. And to this day, I went home and I cried. And I remember the next day I had to go back to set and Adam made like this song and he would call me 16 take Shayna. You know, he makes those goofy little songs up and,
yeah.
You know, he made light of it and stuff. But for me, it was the most like, I was so embarrassed and so, but they all made me feel really good the next day. And Billy was really cool about it. So,
right. Obviously. Well,
I still get to go on a date with him. So
that's right. He obviously, you got his attention, I guess.
Yeah.
So after that is when you met Oscar De La Hoya, correct?
Yes, correct. Yeah.
So tell us about that. First of all, how'd you meet him?
Gosh, I met Oscar, you know, we used to run around Hollywood and go to the nightclubs. And after we would all go to this place called Cantor's, this like Jewish deli that we would all, you know, but I would always, one of my best friends worked security. And so we would all like run around to the different clubs. And then we would go meet our friend who was doing security at this club. And one time the club was still going, we were early. And I remember this guy walked by and he had like this big crowd around him and my friend and this other security guard came up and they were like, do you know who that is? Do you know who that is? And they were like, that's Oscar De La Hoya. And I was like, oh, cool. Is that like the fighter guy? Like, I didn't really know. I just thought he was like cute. I was like, oh yeah, he's like, I've heard about him. He's like the one all the women like love. He's like really cute. And they're like, do you want to meet him? And I was like, sure, I'll go meet him. And they brought me over to him and we just like locked eyes and had a drink and that was it. We were like inseparable. Yeah. We danced like all night. And then he invited me up to Big Bear where he was training for his fight. We flew private to this like, to a heavyweight champion fight in Vegas. And it was just really, really fun.
What was that like going to his...
Gosh, watch, you know, I'll be honest. I don't like watching the men I love fight at all. It was the most nerve-wracking thing to watch him fight. I knew he was prepared. I knew he was very talented. I knew he was, you know, going to be just fine, but you know, it's a lot of hard work and sacrifice. You know, you can't have sex with them for like the whole time they're training.
Oh, really?
Yeah. They don't let you have sex with them while they're training. At least his camp didn't. I remember his father being like, it's important that, you know, he's focused and you cannot have sex with him. And I'd be like, okay. Yeah, it was so crazy. So
you couldn't be a distraction, probably.
I definitely could not be a distraction. But, you know, I mean, they were up in Big Bear. They were there for months at a time. He was up from 5 a.m. training, you know, diet, nutrition, you know, sparring. So, you know, it was tough. But, you know, when he would win, it was such a fantastic celebration. But, you know, it was so much accumulating to that actual fight. So it was very nerve wracking. And just watching someone you love get punched in the face is never, you know, a good feeling.
Right. I would have felt like Adrian and Rocky. It would have been so exciting. Yeah. So how long did you guys end up dating?
We were together for 3 years. We got engaged about 6 months into our relationship. I also became pregnant with our gorgeous daughter who just turned 24. I can't even take it. Yeah. She just turned 24. She's a spitting image of him. She's so absolutely beautiful. And, we were together for about 3 years. Yeah.
So I read how you guys broke up, which seems a little bit crazy. Is that true? Tell us what actually happened.
It was true. Yeah. It's pretty crazy. I actually just did. He's actually doing an HBO documentary right now. That's going to be coming out in September. And I get really in depth. I was actually surprised that they really wanted me to talk about it to the extent that they did, but they said, nope, this isn't a fluff piece. This is, you know, we're really going to share with the public, you know, the nitty and the gritty. So I was like, okay, well, here you go. But you know, we were together and, you know, I didn't think we were having too many problems, but we were having normal, I think, you know, we just had a baby, you know, new parent kind of problems, things like that. And he was traveling a lot and he was, you know, in training a lot as well. So I didn't think things were too bad, but we were, you know, he said, I'm going to go to New York. I'm going to go do David Letterman. When I come back, let's just start fresh. And, you know, we'll just, you know, he's like, go buy some art, you know, go get some things for the house and we'll just start fresh. I love you. And I was like, okay. Okay. So that's what I did that weekend. I went like shopping. I got some things for the house. You know, I was taking care of the baby. She was about 1.5. And when he came back, I didn't hear from him. And I remember that night, it was like a Monday or Tuesday night and the Latin Grammys were on. And I was at home with my girlfriend and my mom and we were watching the Latin Grammys. And all of a sudden they said, next up on the red carpet is Oscar De La Hoya. And I was like, what do you mean? And it was in LA. And I was like, he's supposed to be in New York doing Letterman. Like, why is he in LA at the Latin Grammys? Why am I not with him at the Latin Grammys? I'm so confused right now. You know, it was very strange. So we were all kind of like waiting for this commercial to come back. And it was like the longest, you know, 60 seconds of my life. And then there he was with his ex-wife, Millie. But at the time he was just on the red carpet with another woman holding hands. And I just remember, you know, like in Kill Bill, when that sound, I just remember like not hearing anything and just like my heart just breaking and I was humiliated. And I just was like, what the hell is happening? And he was holding her hand and like walking like they were a couple. And I just was at home and our baby was in her nursery in the other room. And I just, you know, I just lost sense of reality for a good couple minutes there. And I remember just crying and my mom and my girlfriend consoling me and being like, you know, obviously I tried to call him, no one was answering. And the next day they just had an attorney come to the house and ask if the baby and I would go to a hotel. And I said, absolutely not. You know, this is our home. Like things have to be like taught, like I need to talk to someone, like I need help here, you know? So it was, and I was only like 25 years old. I mean, I look back now and I thought I was this grown up, you know, now that I'm 48 and I look back, I'm like, I was just a baby, you know, it was just a baby. You had a baby. And, you know, it was actually like a pretty scary time, but I got through it.
Yeah, you did get through it. And that was a woman he ended up marrying later. Is that what you said?
He did. Yeah. He ended up marrying her and he was with her for about, I think like 10 years. Yeah. They have 3 children together.
Okay. So it didn't end up being a one night stand per se. So that should
make you feel a little better. No, it wasn't like a one night stand, but I mean, it's like, you know, hey, I get you fall out of love with people. I get things change. Like, at least give me the, I still feel to this day, and I even said this in the documentary, I mean, you know, you can let someone go with dignity and honesty. You know, that was just like really, really humiliating.
Yeah, no, I'm sure. So how did your life end up being with him and co-parenting? Do you guys get along now? Do you talk now?
We did not co-parent at all. He just left. He told me that if I went and sued for palimony, obviously I was going to get child support, but if I sued for palimony, he wouldn't see my daughter and I till she was 16 years old, which I thought was just an idle threat. I was like, how would you not see your, like, who would do that? But he did. He didn't see his daughter and I till she was about 16 years old. He was financially very supportive, which, you know, I'm very grateful for. I'm very thankful that I had that support so that I could raise her the best to my ability as a single mom, basically. And then when he did kind of come back, he was really good there for a little while, and we actually were co-parenting, and we did have some talks. He did apologize to me about, you know, how things were handled, but it was a very long time to wait for an apology. And it was a very, you know, I look back, I can't change anything about it. I feel like I did the best that I could as a mom to give my daughter everything that she, you know, that I could possibly do on my own without his presence. I tried to surround her with positive male role models. I would even ask the schools, you know, like, put her in a class with a male teacher. You know, I want her to have strong male role models. I did everything I could. We were getting along pretty good, but I guess he has a new girlfriend now, and we don't speak anymore. And I'm okay with it.
Yeah, I'm
100% okay with it.
And what about his relationship with his daughter, your daughter? Are they now in touch?
They were working. They were doing really good. They were having a pretty great relationship, but I really don't know where it stands right now. I think since he's entered a new relationship, I think, you know, he's just one of those guys that, like, you know, shifts when he's with a certain kind of woman. You know, some guys are like that. Some guys, women do it too, I guess, you know, yeah. I mean, sometimes when people get into new relationships, they just, you know, they go MIA, they go,
everybody else doesn't matter, and their whole life revolves around that person.
People just do that sometimes. And so, you know, just time changes things.
Okay.
So in between, so it sounds like you got a lot of financial support. You didn't necessarily have to run and go get a job.
I definitely did not have to struggle. And I got to really give my daughter a great education. I got to give, you know, my daughter a very comfortable life and for that, I'm truly, truly thankful for that.
So did you, that's great. So did you end up being able to take a little bit of break from work and just be a mom for a while in there?
I did.
You weren't acting.
Yes,
And what'd you do during that? Just literally be like a single mom?
I was really just kind of a single mom. And, you know, I shortly after, about 2 or 3 years later, I met Travis when she was about three or four years old. I also started directing my pageants. You know, I'm the executive director for Miss Nevada USA and Miss Utah USA. That's a full-time year-long job. So I always worked on my pageants and kind of gave back to my girls. But back then I was the director for Miss California USA, which was pretty massive. So I kind of did my pageants. I did my acting gigs. I still worked and I took care of my daughter.
And somewhere in there, was that when you were offered Playboy?
Yes, correct. Yes. I was offered Playboy in 2001. I was Miss December 2001. They had offered it to me when I was on Pacific Blue, but Oscar didn't want me to do it. And so I turned it down. They actually offered me a celebrity pictorial and I turned it down. And then when they came back again, they said, well, we want you to be a playmate this time, not a celebrity. And I was just like, you know what? I really don't care. I think Playboy's so awesome. I think it would be really fun. And it was one of the best things I ever did. I just love my Playboy family. And it was such an honor to be a part of it.
So what was that like? Did you get to meet Hugh?
Oh God. Yeah. I met Hef when I was Miss USA, when I was 19, I did a charity event at the Playboy Mansion with all the chefs in LA. And I remember he came up to me and he said, you know, you truly are a beautiful young woman. And I thought, that's the coolest compliment ever coming from the coolest man, you know, just because he, you know, I mean, he's seen all the most beautiful women in the world and has dated. He didn't want to date me. He was married to Kimberly at the time. He was just being kind. And I met Hef so many times. I played backgammon with Hef. I would go to the Sunday movie nights. He opened up his home to us. We would have gaming and volleyball and go in the grotto and we could tan and use his gym. And he had wonderful buffet dinners for us. And we watched the newest movies out. And it was really just like wonderful friends. And no one objectified us or made us feel sexually harassed. It was just class. And it was always so much fun.
If you felt stuck trying to lose weight, you're not alone. Enter Weight Loss by Hers. It's designed to support you in reaching your goals. And Hers now offers access to an affordable range of FDA-approved GLP-1 medications, including the Wegovy pill and the Wegovy pen. With Wegovy at Hers, lose up to 20% or more of your body weight when combined with diet and exercise. It helps you regulate your appetite, eat less, and keep weight off. Plus, Wegovy is the first GLP-1 available in a pill, so there are no needles needed. Everything is 100% online through Hers. You'll connect with a licensed provider who will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your medication is delivered right to your door, no insurance necessary. And it doesn't stop there. Weight Loss by Hers goes beyond medication by offering access to 24/7 messaging with your care team and tons of in-app lifestyle and nutrition tips like recipes, meal plans, fitness videos, sleep content, and more. Even better, with a range of affordable GLP-1 options, Hers makes it simple to find an approach that fits your needs and your budget, if eligible. You'll get a treatment plan personalized to you and unlimited dosage changes as needed. It's weight loss designed to work with your life. Ready to reach your goals? Visit forhers.com/women to get personalized, affordable care that gets you. That's forhers.com/women. forhers.com/women. Weight loss by Hers is not available in all 50 states. Wegovy is the registered trademark of Novo Nordisk AS. To get started and learn more, including important safety information, Wegovy clinical study information, and restrictions, visit forhers.com.
Did you end up seeing the documentary made about Playboy?
I refuse to watch it. I won't watch the documentary. I have personally been up there so many times and for so many years. I've watched so many of those women, a lot of those girls who claim to be girlfriends and playmates. And I think it's disgusting what they're saying about him. And I think it's absolutely horrid. He was a wonderful man to a lot of women. He helped a lot of women. He put a lot of women up who were dealing with drug habits, poverty. He helped women with their children when their husbands left them. He did a lot of incredible things for a lot of people. And I think talking about him after his passing is just vile. I won't
mean without giving him an opportunity to fire back or have his say.
Of course, right? Yeah. Defend. I think, you know, taking shots at someone who's passed away, who can't defend himself, I just think this is tarnishing the name of someone who was really good to people. I just think it's vile.
So why do you think some of those women said what they said? Do you think that might've been their experience, or they're just looking for fame, or what do you think?
I think they're looking for money and fame. 100%. Yeah.
Well, I'm glad to hear that wasn't your experience. I also had met him, and he had been very, you know, respectful and kind, and I did not have that experience as well. So when you were doing that, you were dating for a brief amount of time Dennis Quaid, right?
I did date Dennis, yeah, for on and off for almost a year, yeah.
Oh, so not too short of a time. And did he have something to do with your decision to do Playboy at this point?
I talked to Dennis about Playboy. You know, it was something that I really, you know, thought about, because I really always wanted to be an actress. I love being on scripted television shows. And, you know, at the time it was still a little taboo. And I wanted, you know, I really thought long and hard if it would hurt my career, if it would hurt my image, if people want to take me seriously. But really, at the end of the day, the roles that I was being casted for were always the blonde bimbo, or the pretty girl, or the, I wasn't, you know, no one at it was giving me the opportunity to showcase my, my talents. I was going to have to, you know, dye my hair black and cut it and, you know, to try, I wasn't going to do that. So, you know, I talked to Dennis, you know, and he was like, I really don't think it's going to bother, you know, hurt your career either way. Just, you know, go have fun, use the press, you know, get some opportunity from it and enjoy it. But, and he was right. It didn't hurt my career at all. And it was actually a really awesome, awesome, experience. And I still worked, I still did lots of great TV and movie projects.
So after that, did you find you got more notoriety? Did you become more famous from doing that?
Oh God. Yeah. It was so great. You know, back then Playboy had like a modeling agency and they would send us out on all kinds of stuff. I did lots of hosting for the E Channel. I don't know if you remember that show. It was like Party Central or something like that. Brooke Burke, you know, hosted that one show. And yeah, I got to host tons of shows on E, and yeah, it really kind of spiraled into all these great opportunities. It was awesome.
So from there, you went on to meet Travis. How did you meet him?
I met Travis out at a nightclub on Sunset. I forgot what it was called. It was over at the Sunset Marquee, not Sky Bar, but it was this other little bar. And my girlfriend liked one of his bandmates. And I didn't know who Blink-182 was in any capacity. So I just remember going in, and, you know, back then he had a mohawk, and I know lots of people wear mohawks now, but back then they did not. And he had lots of tattoos, and, you know, Oscar was pretty clean cut, and so was Dennis. You know, they were pretty clean cut guys, no tattoos, things like that. And I just remember my girlfriend, you know, was talking to his bandmate, and I was like, and they were like, oh, he's in the middle of getting a divorce. And I was like, oof, I don't want to be involved with a guy who's in the middle of a divorce. You know, I was like, I'm single. I'm feeling finally in a really good place after Dennis and Oscar. And, but I was like, I'll be your wingman. I'll hang out with, you know, I'll be your wing girl. And I just remember being like, kind of like, holy shit. He has like this mohawk and tattoos and neck tattoos. And I was like, whoa. But, we just like, I remember we just talked and we just like, it was like the same thing, like with Oscar, it was like kismet. And I knew I was going to marry him. I knew I was going to have like his children, and I knew it was going to be a very epic sort of relationship.
Wow. So what is he like as a person? Is he affectionate? Is he like just as affectionate as we see these days with you?
Yeah. I mean, sorry, I'm getting comfortable. Yeah, he's very affectionate. He's a very, very romantic man. I mean, obviously you can see that even in his newfound relationship. He's very romantic. He's a big gift giver. He's very loving and he's very funny. You know, I don't think a lot of people see that kind of side of him. He's actually a very, very funny guy because he comes across normally very quiet when he's out and around people. But when you're close to him, he's a very funny guy.
So you guys ended up having two children together, correct?
Yes. We have Landon, who's 19, and Alabama, who's 17.
Amazing names. And so how is he as a dad?
He's a great dad. Yeah. He's a great dad. You know, we've had our ups and down co-parenting through the years as well. I think co-parenting in general is just a very difficult thing to do. Yeah.
Yeah. So, and how did you guys finally break up? How long were you together?
We were married for 4 years, but we still stayed together for like another 4 years, kind of off and on living together, trying to co-parent, you know, together, but, it was just a difficult time.
Right. So talk to me about his plane crash for a second. Where were you when you heard about it?
Oh God. We were actually working on things and I was in our home, and, Alabama was actually in the bed with me and the other kids were sleeping. And, he called me and he was about to get on the private jet and he was just really nervous. And he was saying, you know, this jet isn't like the other jet. You know, this was actually the last gig he was doing after a very long tour. And I just said, you know, honey, just get on the jet, like get home, and then we can just enjoy our time together, you know, and we can just focus on the family and just be together. And he was like, yeah, I don't know about this one though. It's really small. I have a bad feeling. And I was like, you know, we didn't like flying in general. So we always kind of had a bad feeling, you know, you know, they had taken a vote about DJ AM had a gig in LA and some of his other friends wanted to get home as well. So they took a vote to get on the jet. They kind of needed all of them to pool in to get the jet. And I just remember being in bed, and it was like 15 minutes later, but it felt like an hour. I don't know how to explain it. And the phone rang. And actually before the phone rang, my daughter sat up, Alabama. And I remember her going, "Mommy, where's little Chris?" And little Chris was his assistant who was on the plane. And I remember her going, "Mommy, where's little Chris?" And I was like, "Little Chris is with daddy, honey. Like, go back to sleep. Like, it's okay. Go back to sleep." And then about 15 minutes later, the phone rang, and it was a deputy. And he was like, is Shayna Mokler there? And I said, yes. And he goes, "Ma'am, there's been a terrible accident. There's been a plane crash." And I thought they were joking. And I was like, "Ha ha ha ha, guys." Like, I thought it was Travis and the guys joking. And I was like, "This isn't funny. I don't think that's funny." Like, you know, and the guy was like, "No, ma'am, I'm being serious. There's been a terrible accident." And I just was like, "This isn't a joke. Like, you don't joke about stuff like that." And the man was like, "Ma'am, this is deputy so-and-so from the North Carolina Police Department there." And right when he said that, I heard Travis screaming in the background, like blood curdling, screaming cries. And, like, I'm on fire. And he goes, "We need to airlift him. And, you know, we need you to, you know, we're going to airlift. We're taking him to," I believe it was Georgia. They were taking from North Carolina to Georgia. He didn't end up getting airlifted. He didn't want to get in another aircraft. They ended up driving him to Georgia. And I just hung up the phone, and I called his father, and I don't even think I was hysterically crying. And I remember him telling me, I could hear on the phone him saying, little Chris didn't make it. And that night they brought little Chris's wife over to the house, and I had to tell her that little Chris didn't make it. And then his manager and I get on a plane like at 5 a.m, like the first plane out to Georgia to go see him. It was a pretty horrific experience.
And I think 4 people ended up dying in that plane crash, correct?
Yes. Little Chris, his assistant Che, his security Che, and the 2 pilots, a man and a woman. It was actually the older pilot's last.
Wow. And they ended up saying what it was, a tire that popped. Did they ever
figure out? A tire popped. Yeah. And I think between the pilots, one was trying to take off and one was trying to land. So there was this sort of up down kind of like thing. And then they went across like a highway and into an embankment.
Wow.
Wow. So obviously that affected Travis deeply. I mean, he didn't want to get on a plane for many years after. How did you help him out of, you know, how did you get him home from the hospital?
Gosh, well, we were in the hospital in Georgia for about a month, and then we took a tour bus home. We had 2 guys drive night and day to get him home with a nurse on the bus. And then we got him to the Grossman Burn Center here in Los Angeles, where he was there for another 2 months. And he had probably over like 17 surgeries through that time. We ended up getting back together, but eventually decided to break up down the road from there.
Right.
And DJAM also was injured, but not as badly, right?
Yeah. DJAM was, you know, probably in the hospital for like a day or two. He just kind of walked away with like some cuts and bruises. It was pretty crazy, you know. You know, the difference is when the plane was on fire, Travis opened the plane door with his hand, so burnt his hand. And then what they thought was a wing was actually the jet engine. So AM sort of had his shoes on and jumped down, where Travis jumped on and slid down, and so burnt and got the jet fuel on him. Yeah.
Wow.
So did that make their relationship closer, or did they not want to talk about it at all and they went their separate ways? Do you know what happened there?
I don't really know. You know, I mean, that's something that I guess, you know, they would really have to speak on. I mean, I guess my personal opinion or take as an outsider is I think AM carried a lot of guilt, because he was the one that wanted that, you know, wanted to get home for this gig. And I think, you know, obviously not having such severe injuries and seeing Travis kind of go through the severity of his injuries in the hospital was probably very, I don't see how any human being couldn't carry some serious amounts of remorse or guilt. I think that was very, very difficult for him to see. But I don't think Travis ever blamed him. You know, I think Travis still clearly 1000% loved him and never wanted him to feel that way. But I just think as a human being, we would naturally feel that way. But, you know, he definitely wanted to still be there and support him for, you know, and have that friendship for sure. I mean, it's a thing. They were the only two survivors, you know, so, I mean, that has to bring you close.
Right. And then were you around when DJAM lost his life? Were you, did you?
I was, yeah.
And what was that like for Travis and you?
We were actually visiting my parents in Rhode Island. My children were visiting their grandparents and Travis was on tour and he got the call and we just sat and cried, you know, It was just a devastating blow. And, you know, that was the one person that he had, you know, who lived through that horrific experience, who could understand the totality of it. And I think to lose that person and possibly think, you know, we lost him in a way because he felt, you know, bad about it or something was, you know, it was just devastating for everybody. And DJ AM was such a loved soul, and he's so loved and he's so respected. And, you know, there's just such a community of people who just love him so much. So it was just a loss for a large, large group of people in LA.
Yeah. Yeah. It was horrible to hear about his drug overdose. So, eventually you and Travis finally cut it off and end the relationship. And then were you okay co-parenting after that for a while?
We did. I mean, we did. We tried our best, you know, that's one thing we did do, but, you know, I don't have lots of fond memories, anymore. You know, I used to try to glorify it and say, you know, but, you know, looking back, I feel like, you know, it was a lot of in and out of court. It was a lot of, you know, headbutting, and I really just don't have too many great things to say about it.
So, yeah, no, I understand.
You know, or anything positive now. Yeah.
Yeah. So, and I know you don't want to dwell too much on your ex, but if anyone's ex was in the news for dating somebody as famous as a Kardashian, it's in your face all the time. People are obviously putting it in your face. Was that hard to hear about them, or you already knew this in the background that they were dating Travis and Courtney?
So bullied in the media. And since this relationship ensued, I mean, really treated unfairly and unjustly, and so bullied in the media that to me, it just has put a really bad taste in my mouth.
But why? Because you've been vocal about not being a fan of theirs, or just because you're the ex?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Not being a fan, you know, just if I made any statement whatsoever, I was just called bitter and jealous. I don't even know Travis Barker anymore. We haven't been together for, you know, since almost 2010, 12. And I don't even know him. I don't know what his favorite movie is. I don't know what his favorite food or color is. We're not together. I have been in my own relationships. So there's besides the fact that we just have, and we only have our 17-year-olds, we'll be 18 this year, you know, and then our work is done here, and we never have to see each other or talk to each other ever again. And I look forward to that day.
So talk to me about being on Celebrity Big Brother. That you're like a super fan, right? You always had been watching that and knew the game really well.
Yeah. Yes, I have. One second. Sorry. Can you give me 1 second? I apologize. Hold on. Sorry. Okay. Celebrity Big Brother. Oh my God. It was just like the coolest dream come true. I have watched the show for years. I've watched the celebrity one. I've watched the regular seasons. And every time I watch it, I was just always like, oh, if I could just like get on this show, if I could just do this show, it would just be so cool. And when I got the call, I just couldn't believe it. I was like, really? Me? Okay. And it was awesome. It was a really epic experience.
Do you think anything has to do with who's on the show and how well they know the show and the game, or it'll just play out no matter what?
I think it could go both ways, but you know, I think with the regular season, they're all super fans. They've all watched the show. They all know how the game goes. They all are going in. I think with the celebrity edition, there were definitely celebrities who had never seen the show, didn't do their research and didn't know what they were doing. And I think that's where I aligned with people that had never seen the show and didn't understand what I was doing or why I was doing the things I was doing. And it really bit me in the butt later because of it.
And did you make some lasting friendships? Do you talk to anybody still?
I talked to Chris Kirkpatrick. I just think he is the coolest guy. He is so sweet. He's such a great dad. He's an amazing husband. And he's just a great friend overall. He'll check up in on me every now and then. And I think he's awesome. I also love Teddy Mellencamp. I think what she's doing for women and is awesome. Her all in empowerment, you know, fitness, healthy fitness lifestyle is awesome. But the rest of the people I kind of just let fall to the wayside.
So I have to ask, you don't speak to Lamar Odom anymore?
No. And Lamar was just a nice guy. He was just like a nice friend, super cool. He's just a sweet guy.
But it ended up causing you some problems, right? So when you came out, when you left the house, weren't there some issues in your personal life that?
Yeah, you know, I think, you know, I mean, I think the things sometimes, you know, the way they're edited on TV may make it seem like there was nothing ever romantic or flirtatious with us, but I could see how it could be perceived that way. But you know, there was nothing there. And if you watch the 24/7 live feeds, you could tell there was just nothing. But more than anything, you know, a lot of the castmates called and they, you know, apologized, and that meant a lot to me from some of them, because there were some things that were said on the live feeds that I just was like, my mind was just blown. You know, I was like, wow. Like, just mean.
Right. So now talk to me about OnlyFans. You are on OnlyFans, correct?
Sure. I am, yeah.
And what's that like? I mean, are you doing like, you know, cooking in your kitchen naked? Are you like, what tell me all about it.
My OnlyFans is pretty tame. I don't do anything pornographic. I don't do any sexual, you know, stimulation or playing with toys or anything like that. It's basically very Playboy-esque. I do try to interact with my fans. I'm actually a big gamer, so I'm going to be gaming. And I play Call of Duty, so I'll be gaming with a lot of my fans out there as well. But yeah, I keep it pretty tame, but we have a lot of fun on there, and I chat it up and do lives and things like that. But I love it. I love OnlyFans. You know, I look at Playboy now, you know, and since Hef has passed, you know, Playboy just sold, I think, their entire catalog to like a porn company in Canada or something. Like all our photos, you know, we own none of them. We own none of those photos. We can't do anything with them. And so I just like the fact that I have control of, you know, my photos and what I do. I don't have a problem posing nude. It's just not something that's taboo to me. It's not something that is bothers me. It never has been. I've been modeling nude since I was 19 in Cosmopolitan magazine. So it's just not something that is very crazy and wild to me.
Right. An issue for you. So those people that want to get involved in OnlyFans, is it true that you can actually make a living on this and you can quit your 9-to-5 job and, you know, do this and be making tens of thousands of dollars a month? Like, do you feel like that is a true?
OnlyFans is a very, very lucrative platform, but it is its own platform. I mean, there really is sort of a science to how you, I had to have an agency sort of kind of help me and teach me how to really utilize the platform. But if you are dedicated, I mean, it's not going to be, it's like everything, you know, people think they're going to have a podcast. As you know, podcasts take a lot of work and it is not an easy thing to do. People think they're going to have a YouTube channel and it's just going to, oh, I'm going to make videos and edit it and I'm going to be a billionaire. They take a lot of work, you know, and OnlyFans is exactly the same. It's not something that you can just go on, post some nudes and you're going to, you know, it takes a lot of work and, you know, everything takes work if you want to be successful. So, you know, there's a definite specific way of how to use that platform, just like YouTube and podcasts.
Right. And it takes time too. I mean, you really have to be, build the viewership or the listenership or whatever it is.
Yeah.
To like get, yeah, to get people to come. It's not like you start an OnlyFans page and everybody will come just because you announce you're on it. Right. You really have to establish a fan base or whatever. So if you come with a fan base like you, I'm assuming you could have started a little bit quicker than the average person doing it from their bedroom, but it does take a while is what I've found.
Absolutely. But even with me, you know, I mean, to keep fans interested, even on Instagram, I mean, just to keep, you know, building your fan base, building your growth, you know, everything does take time. It takes work and dedication. And sometimes it takes a team of people. So, you know, it's, you know, nothing in life is easy. I think people need to remember that. So
what are you doing now? Where can we see you? What should we look forward with you?
Yeah. Right now, I'm actually producing my pageants. I have my Miss Nevada USA and June 24th and 25th. I have my Miss Utah USA July 7th and 8th. So if there's any women out there listening, if you are a resident of those states, you're 14 to 28, please apply. I would absolutely love for you to apply. You can go to MissNevadaUSA.com or MissUtahUSA.com. Super. And we actually are allowing married, divorced, and moms to compete now. So that's a new rule and it's pretty exciting. You can also catch me on my IG. You can see all the different things I have going on. Our HBO documentary on Oscar De La Hoya and my experience being engaged and having a daughter with him, I speak very candidly about. That'll be coming out in September on HBO. And yes, you can go to my OnlyFans, which is OnlyFans Shayna Mokler Free. It's a free page. And please come subscribe. I have a lot of fun there and I share a lot of things that I can't share on Instagram. So come join me. It's fun.
Perfect. And my last question would be, do you have any reality TV shows that you still want to be on or you look forward to getting that call that you're a fan of?
Gosh, I get, you know, I love reality TV. I really do. I would love to go back to a Big Brother All-Stars, maybe. I think that would be really, really fun. I have my fan base wants to see me on the Housewives franchise in some capacity so bad. I would be open to doing that. I think I would be a no-brainer for that show, but that would be really, I think, a fun show to do. But I'm open to reality, but my heart is really in scripted projects. I would love to be like on a Grey's Anatomy or an American Horror Story where you get to play different characters each season. That's kind of like my dream jobs.
Great. And are you dating anybody exciting in your life right now?
I am currently dating someone, but I'm keeping it on the low because
we all know what happened.
We all know what happens when we talk about it.
Got it. All right. Well, we wish you the best of luck with that. Thank you so much for joining me, and I hope to see you soon.